talking about spiritual warfare, using the Screwtape letters as a reference. C.S. Lewis. We're up to letter number 7. Each of these are correspondence between two demons on how to best help with redirecting people's souls away from Jesus and to Satan. And the subject for this one is the tactics of misdirection. One of Satan's probably most useful tools, I would say. So, if somebody would read paragraph 0, kind of a long paragraph, so make sure you know what you're committing to if you want to start reading it.
My dear Warlord, I wonder you should ask me whether it is essential to keep the patient in ignorance of your own existence. That question, at least for the present phase of the struggle, has been answered for us by the High Command. Our policy for the moment is to conceal ourselves. Of course, this has not always been so. We are really faced with a cruel dilemma. When a human disbelieves in our existence, we lose all the pleasing results of direct terrorism and we make no magicians. On the other hand, when they believe in us, we cannot make them materialists and skeptics, at least not yet. I have great hopes that we shall learn in due time how to emotionalize and mythologize their science in such an extent that what is in effect believed in us, thought not under that name, will creep in while the human mind remains closed to belief in the enemy. The life force, the worship of sex, and some aspects of physiology may have proved useful. If once we can vaguely call forces while denying the existence of spirits, then the end of the war will be in sight. But in the meantime, we must obey our orders. I do not think you will have much difficulty in keeping the patient in the dark. The fact that devils are predominantly comic figures in the modern imagination will help you in a plain suspicion of your existence begins to rise in his mind. Suggest to him a picture of something in red tights and persuade him that since he cannot believe in that, it is an old textbook method of confusing them. He therefore cannot believe in you.
Okay. Talks about the idea of whether or not demons should make their presence known to our conscious mind. And he says that their policy right now is to conceal themselves, but this has not always been so. What is he referring to? Okay. All right, it was very clearly happening during the time that that Jesus walked the earth. But that's really about the only time in history that it seems like that was the case. You see that as being a coincidence. I had never really thought about it until I had read the Screwtape letters, that you didn't really hear a lot about demon possession, except during the times when there was somebody who had the power to cast out demons. And so I kind of fell into place. It's like, okay, never really thought about it that way before. So what do you think then about today? You know, there are people who claim to cast out demons today, and there are people who claim to have demons today. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm a two-tailed dude.
Yep.
But people have always, for some reason, even this day and time, particularly, trying to say that they can do this or they have the power to get good.
Yeah, there are people who claim to have spiritual gifts today, but it's very hard to see any evidence of spiritual gifts. I think there's probably some truth to that. And by the way, when I say spiritual gifts, I mean supernatural type spiritual gifts, not the ones that we all have. Yes. About to bring that up, that a lot of people attribute the first century stories of demon possession to mental illness and things like that.
Yes. You even find that in the footnotes of some translations of the Bible, mm-hmm. where they refer to demon possession as possibly epilepsy.
Mm-hmm. Like where the boy kept falling into the fire.
Yeah,
and everything.
Yeah, he was having seizures. Probably got a little take on, different take on this. If we accept the fact that Satan's real and that he does have a certain amount of power, which Scripture does refer to, and he has his angels to do his dirty work. Can someone be possessed by a demon against their will? No. I think that's over with. But if you invite that in, you bet it in. Okay. And that's what makes things like Wicca so dangerous.
And actually, we're about to discuss that because of what it says here.
You bet you can be possessed by a demon.
Yep, that's true. He goes on to say in here, we're really faced with a cruel dilemma. When humans disbelieve in our existence, we lose all the pleasing results of direct terrorism, and we make no magician. On the other hand, when they believe in us, we cannot make them materialists and skeptics, at least not yet. What does he mean by the direct terrorism and not making magicians and those types of things? Any thought?
Well, the reference there, of course, is obvious for the reaction of people when they receive, someone like the New Testament times of before. They were scared. The man that lived in the, among the tombs of himself was possessed of, demons. And that's got to be pleasing for the, for the devil. This is fine.
Right.
For them.
That's what he means by the direct terrorism.
Yeah.
So is there such thing as magic or black magic or witches? Things like that.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah.
I'm letting you interpret it however you want. Yes.
I don't think people today in society or a lot of society, they like the thrill or the scare or the drama of it all, but I would Then I just found myself starting to get a little freaked out. You know, it's just weird how your mind, even though I'm telling them, no, we're not going to talk about that, then I'm starting to get a little freaked out about it. So, I don't know. I think for a human nature, we feel like a drill, and so many people start dabbling in that and telling stories and then sharing it to children. And I do think it's a gateway to safety.
And the Bible has specific prohibitions against practicing witchcraft.
Right.
It acknowledges the fact that witchcraft exists. It, you know, it doesn't say what powers there are to be had. But you can assume that if Satan has power, that, you know, there might be an avenue by which you could use Satan's power in certain ways. Can you think of any biblical examples of whenever were occasions of the occult or...
Saul consulted with the witch of Endor.
Yeah. Okay, very good. All right.
She should have been alive.
Okay.
Really, she should have been stoned.
And so what did he use the witch of Endor to do? Do you remember the story?
He called it Samuel, wasn't it?
I think he was successful, as I recall.
Yeah. She was on her part. She was surprised.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't think she realized that was going to happen. But I know. I love that story. That was interesting. As I recall, Samuel wasn't too happy about the experience either.
Oh, no. He was bothered, yes. Satan does play around with our mind and our thinking. That's part of, you know, the whole tactic is to get us thinking, you know, badly about things and thinking in the wrong directions, and then our behavior follows that. So we have to be aware that that's where a major part of the damage, the danger really is at. It's in controlling our thinking, and that's whether we believe in magic, whether if a person is convinced in their mind that witchcraft works and, you know, hey, I'm a witch, and, you know, then indeed you leave yourself open. At the very least, mentally, and then your behaviors follow for the influence of Satan on your mind. You have to be aware of that.
But, you know, there's another side to it, because there are some ultra-religious people who see Satan around every corner. He's this boogeyman, and anything that they see that might be possibly wrong has got to be of Satan. And children have been killed because they'll do exorcisms on them and they'll say, this child has Satan in them. Maybe because they're, I don't know, restless or whatever, or they talked back to them once or something. And we have to be careful on that front too, because I've encountered people like that. Well, you know, that had to be Satan who did that. That had to be Satan who did that. Sometimes they're just human nature. Sometimes it just happens. And not everything that we see. And, you know, there's a big resurgence in the Catholic Church now with exorcisms. And, you know, I don't know how everybody feels about that, and I won't get into that, but you know, we just got to be really careful that you get to talking to some of these people, and they can do just what Tammy was talking about. They can start reeling people in and think, or making you scared or creeped out or whatever.
Well, that's what C.S. Lewis is trying to make. The point he's trying to make is that Satan can use wherever your mind goes, and use it against you, even if you are a religious person. there are still avenues that he can use to misdirect your mind down paths where they shouldn't go. Oh, no.
But this one guy who was his brother on the program I was looking at, and he wanted to be even with him. So this guy came in with all this pain on him, and this guy hired him and blew this stuff in his face. And they ended up burning this guy alive. They burned him alive because he didn't have any kill. There are drugs out there that can. Mm-hmm. Literally caused these kinds of things to happen. And some grave robbers came out and saw where he was trying to get out of his box. But he couldn't get out, spirit of my life. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe that these things literally people were coming up with all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but a thousand ways to die.
Betty, you have to keep close eye on him.
That show has some crazy stuff.
That's
that show
right.
has some weird
stuff.
Okay, well, back to the lesson. He says, on the other hand, when they believe in us, we cannot make them materialists and skeptics. And he goes on to say that his ideal combination is the materialist magician. He refers to it. So he's trying to incorporate both aspects there. So you have the materialist who would deny the existence of spirits, and then you have a magician that wants to use the idea of spirit. What do you think that he would mean by the materialist magician?
I think you see that every day at school.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say that's a pretty good working definition of evolution.
Well, no. I was thinking materialist magician. I was thinking the person that makes you think you need material things to be something. Yeah, I guess we were just thinking, that's a good thing there, though. We were just on two different planes there.
Yeah, well, he describes it as the man not using but veritably worshiping what he vaguely calls forces while denying the existence of spirits. And so it's sort of accepting the world at face value with just some kind of a vague idea of supernatural forces underneath it. Yes, there you go. That's what it made me think of, too.
Yeah. It'll be like those palm leaves. People that stand, they can leave the palm and predict what's going to happen for you and stuff like that.
They're kind of capitalizing on that idea of, in order to get rich, let me see if I can kind of use this idea of supernatural forces. Not really calling them spirits. And, of course, the palm reader or everything is just in it for money, but if they can convince you that they've got some kind of special knowledge or they can tap into the supernatural, that way you're willing to keep giving them money.
Well, it's like here, if they have that kind of power, they don't need to use the power. They can use their power to get whatever they need to stay in life.
Mm-hmm. Why can't he know which stocks to buy, and then he doesn't have to?
Don't say it doesn't work that way.
Well, I know. It's like the old joke, you call up the psychic hotline, they ask your name. Why don't you know it? I've just called you up.
Yeah.
Then they'll have caller ID.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see that.
I know.
And they verify and double verify the readings. And
they're licensed.
They kind of make it legitimate.
Yeah, these are certified psychics. Yeah, so I think they're certifiable.
But the computer
certified to be a good
thing. But how's this any different than prosperity theology, though?
Well, it kind of comes down to that. There are people wanting to get rich. This is a way of getting rich, is by preying on people that don't know any better, that are willing to acknowledge the idea of maybe somebody has more information than I do by supernatural means. And so there's always people willing to take advantage of people that feel that way.
Well, somebody asked me once, you know, what kind of car am I supposed to drive? I said, how about you drive a pickup truck? Well, he has a particularly big house. I mean, it's a nice little house. Don't you think you have more than that? I don't know. Russ, maybe you do. Maybe he's not living right. I don't know. But seriously, there are people that look at it. They look at the trappings. And, you know, you should really be in here in an Armani suit, Russ, you know. Or Mercedes or something.
I'm not saying no to any of that
stuff. Bring it on. But it's a powerful sentence where he says, if once we can produce our perfect work, the materialist magician, the man, not using but veritably worshiping what he vaguely calls forces while denying the existence of spirits, then the end of the war will be in sight. So once somebody gets to that point, and being a personal science, you know, I've always been a little irritated by the evolution. You know, you can substitute the word there, you know, the scientific magician, I guess, in modern product, where, you know, everything's explained by some mysterious force, but we're not going to leave them to God.
Right.
Okay. You know, but we'll talk about these forces here that we can put a mathematical formula to, as if they were, you know, some sort of God.
What about gravity? Nobody can explain gravity.
Yeah, it's there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We can do a lot with it mathematically.
They'll accept the fact that it's statistically impossible for our universe to exist, but still deny, in some cases, the existence of the force that put it in place. He ends up here, and he talks about a textbook method of confusing people, of saying, you know, when people think about demons, think of them as the guy in red tights, in the little devil suit, and that's such a ludicrous image that then we deny the existence of devils. By giving us something that's outright ludicrous, then we deny all existence of something that actually does exist. This is a textbook way of confusing people. And people do that to us all the time. They'll talk about, oh, you're a Christian? Oh, you're the people that believe the earth is flat, right? You know, no, we're not. And it puts us on the defensive because they'll try to make us think, oh, well, if you're a Christian, that means you think the earth is flat. Not the case at all, but then it throws us off our guard and makes us question, do I believe the earth is flat? You know, actually, the Bible never taught that. People read the Bible and assumed that, but the Bible never taught that. In fact, it teaches the opposite. All right, paragraph 1. I'd like to read that for us. It's a little shorter.
I have not forgotten my plans to consider whether we should make the patient an extreme patriot or an extreme passion. All extremes, except extreme devotion to the enemy, are to be imposed. Not always, of course, but at this period. Some ages are lukewarm and complacent, and then it is our business to soothe them with faster asleep. Other ages, of which the present one, are unbalanced and prone to passion, and it is our business to inflame them. Any small colony, bound together by some interest which other men dislike or ignore, tends to develop inside itself a hothouse mutual admiration. Towards the outer world, a great deal of noise. A great deal of pride and hatred is entertained without shame because the cause is its sponsor and it is thought to be impersonal. Even when the little group exists, originally for the enemy-bound purpose, this remains true.
Okay. He has an interesting take on things here. He says, as long as you can separate people into small groups and make them think their group is somehow exclusive and make them look down on everybody that's not part of their group, that this is something that Satan would encourage. He says, even when the original purpose of such a group was a noble or perhaps a biblical purpose. What do you think of that? Have you ever seen that to be true? You ever seen it to be true in the Church of Christ?
Yeah.
Okay. What have you seen, Beverly?
Well, really believe that they are the ones that they are doing absolutely everything right, and they are the ones that are going to go to heaven and to be with the Lord forever. And that unless you're doing exactly what they are doing, then you will not go. And so that's why I've always in my life had a problem with when I hear members say, and we are really doing this thing. We know that we're on the right track here. And we are really doing this right here. Because somewhere in my mind, it seems like, okay, so what kind of exclusive egg are you putting on this?
Well, interesting comment there. I like what you said, Beverly. And I've read some things that I wouldn't necessarily recommend, particularly to people who are new in the faith. But one of the charges that's made that I think is valid at some time is that we have had in the church, not here but in other places, basically an untaught teaching that says if we have a perfect worship service, then that's what pleases God. And we kind of ignore the other 6 days of the week. And as long as when we come together, we do everything right, which is kind of what you're talking about, then, you know, it's okay. You know, whatever weaknesses we have the other 6 days of the week, now, you know, God's not that interested in that. He just wants to be sure that that Sunday morning worship service is carried out in perfect order.
It's true.
And we have to be kind of careful with that.
Sometimes we get so carried away with the idea of we're the ones that have it right on baptism and on doing the Lord's Supper every week and not using instruments that we can easily develop an attitude where we forget what the most important teachings are of the New Testament. You know, those are just procedures. What Christianity is all about is Jesus dying for our sins and us trying to spread the message of there is a way to be reconciled to God. And that right now we're separated from Him by our sins.
Only the ones with the room in heaven.
Exactly, yeah. It's like the old joke, yeah, you know, don't make any noise. The Church of Christ members are in there and they think they're the only ones here in heaven.
I think that can sort of still be seen on Elijah's field to get to his father's field with just Christians in general. Sometimes we feel like because we know God, you know, we're trying to do things right. And other people that we see in the streets, you know, the hobos, someone that's not up to our standard, you don't have nothing to do with that. We don't have founders for them, we don't want to help them, we don't, you know, we treat them as if they haven't got the same thing. You got to treat them as if they haven't got the same
thing. That was my next question was, yes, in thinking about the church in general, sometimes we develop that attitude toward people that we would consider the pagans. And have a self-righteous attitude rather than the attitude of let's go out and help them become what we've learned that we can become. You know, instead of looking down on them, you know, that person's not saved. Well, what are we doing about it?
Succeeded in dividing a whole nation over the secular issues
and thus dividing us in terms of faith and Christianity, the same one. It works.
That's what Jesus said, a house divided against itself cannot stand. And so if he can divide us politically and in many other views, it makes it very easy for us to place our faith in the same category and divide people that way as well.
But as a Christian, even if that's not your intent, to make someone feel like you're not going to go to heaven because you don't believe what I believe, sometimes if you've been taught, and I agree, you have to make a stand in your belief. And if you don't, and you don't make a stand, I mean, that someone could say, oh, you're not coming to my child's baptism because you think that's totally wrong and you're looking down on us. And in fact, you just don't believe that that's what you need. And we've had that situation happen within our family, and it was a very uncomfortable situation because even if we talk to them about our beliefs in the Bible and love, I still got the vibe that we, you know, that some women just thought, oh, you think you're better than us, or, you know, we're not going to make heaven, our child's not going to come out. It was just a very sticky thing. So sometimes that's not your intent at all. You're just trying to make sure you're your beliefs. And their perception is we're trying to, you know, say we're better or that my conscience is going to be better. So even the most loving people living like that.
There are many church traditions that aren't in the Bible that aren't wrong. They're just not biblical. You know, it's not that they're anti-biblical, it's just something that's not there. And this isn't new to our century either. During the time of the first century, Judaism still existed and was very strong. And in fact, the apostles, for the most part, continued in a lot of the Jewish traditions just so they would be accepted. And because even though those things weren't required anymore, it wasn't wrong to do them. In most cases, there were some exceptions. Yes.
I think that Tim's right. One of the other things that Satan is doing today is really pressing this whole concept of toleration, especially when it comes to religion. No one anymore has a right to say what's right or wrong because your religion and your faith is what you make it to be. And so, therefore, then anyone who does stand up for what is right according to what the Bible is perceived by most others as being intolerant. And that just goes against the, you know, the grain of people today. And that's one of the big things that is crushing Christianity today, is that nobody's willing to stand up for anything right. Because they don't want to be considered to be intolerant.
That's true. And C.S. Lewis said any extreme is a good thing.
Right.
And so you can take the extreme of being so legalistic that you know, so unaccepting of eventually you draw the walls where you're in the box by yourself, or you can be so inclusive to that extreme that you don't stand up for the things that the Bible says.
But Tanya, it boils down to the attitude, and if you feel like you did this out of love and tenderness, you can't do anything about how people react to that. And also, we're told in Romans that if something does offend us and we would feel that it was sinful to participate in it, it shouldn't. And we've talked to people that have been to a lot of different churches around the world, you know, in the military. And there was a woman at one church who didn't believe it was like at a Christmas tree, and I don't want all that right now. But so, you know, the other member, there was one member that went home and took her down because she felt like if I had this woman in my house, I'd be a stumbling block to her. And that's a personal conscience decision. But the thing is that you can only control how you react to a situation. You can't control how other people do. And if you weren't beating someone about on the head with the Bible, then you have to just accept how they reacted to it. You
know. It's incumbent upon us to know our Bibles well enough to know what the Bible says and what the Bible doesn't say. What things may not be the way that we do them, but they're not wrong. And it's always a struggle whenever I attend a different church, whether it's a Church of Christ or a denomination, and things are done differently than the way that we do them. always has to run through my mind, okay, now is this different wrong, or is this just different? And sometimes it's hard to distinguish between the two. As Russ has said, a first century Christian wouldn't even recognize our worship service today. So there are certainly more than one way to conduct a worship service that's acceptable to God.
No, they didn't use the same version.
I don't think they did.
Good enough for the apostles.
That's right. Paragraph 2 continues this thought, so if somebody would read that for us. This is the shortest paragraph, so if you're waiting on a short one, this is it.
We want the church to be small, but not only that few men, they know their enemies, but also that those who do may acquire an even perseverance and the potentially self-righteousness of a secret society. The church itself is, of course, heavily dependent, and we have never yet quite succeeded in getting our own characteristics as a fraction. But subordinate factions within her have often produced admirable results. From the parties of Paul and of Apollos and Paul, down to the high and low parties in the church.
Okay? Once again, even within the church, Satan is working to divide us. Even within congregations, Satan is working to divide us, because that's one of his best methods of attacking Christianity. It's not from without, but from within. He can make it so that we look around and we start to see people that we consider to be lesser Christians, or they're different because they don't believe this. We may sit in the same congregation, but I realize they're much weaker than I am because they don't believe this, and I do. Then that's how Satan works, to divide us and to start building the walls to separate us. Has to do with personality, but it's easy to develop the idea of, well, that's for weak Christians. I'm a strong Christian. I shouldn't have to go forward in front of the congregation, rather than realizing those are the people who are brave enough to admit publicly that they need help. Sometimes people don't go forward not because they're so strong, but because they're too timid.
Well, I've even heard that the thought expressed, going forward, that's just the people that have been embarrassed in church. So it's a private sin, you shouldn't do that. People that way.
But it's a very personal thing, and I don't think we should criticize people for either coming forward or not coming forward. Because it is something that's left to your own conscience. I think whenever you need to come forward, you're going to know deep down inside that's what you should do. Okay, paragraph 3.
If your patient can be induced to become a conscientious objector, he will automatically find himself one of a small, local, organized, unpopular society, and the effects of this on one so new to Christianity will almost certainly be good, but only almost certainly. Has he had serious doubts about the lawfulness serving in a just war before this present war of serving began? Is he a man of great physical courage, so great that he will have no half-conscious misgivings about the real motives of his pacifism? Can he, when nearest to honesty, no human is ever very near, feel fully convinced that he actuated wholly by the desire to obey the enemy? Is he that sort of man, his pacifism, if he is that sort of man, his pacifism will probably not do us much good, and the enemy will probably protect him from the usual consequences of belonging to a sect.
Your best plan in that case would be to attempt a sudden confused emotional crisis from which he might emerge as an uneasy convert to patriotism. Such things can often be managed, but if he is the man I take him to be, try pacifism.
Paragraph 4 continues the thought. Could you read that one as well?
Whichever he adopts, your main task will be the same. Let him begin by treating the patriotism or the pacifism as part of his religion. Then let him, under the influence of patriot partisan spirit, come to regard it as the most important part. Then quietly and gradually nurse him on to the stage at which the religion becomes merely part of the cause, in which Christianity is vague, is valued chiefly because of the excellent arguments it can produce in favor of the British war effort or pacifism. The attitude which you want to guard against is that in which temporal affairs are treated primarily as material for obedience. Once you have made the world an end and faith a means, you have almost won your man, and it makes very little difference what kind of worldly ending he is pursuing. Provided that meetings, pamphlets, policies, movements, causes, and crusades matter to him more than prayers and sacraments and charity, he is ours, and the more religious on those terms, the more securely ours. I could show you a pretty cageful. I could show you a pretty cageful down here.
Okay. Any thoughts on that? I have seen Christians who it seemed like their main function in life was getting together petitions on political types of issues. And, you know, although that can at times be something useful, anything like that that Satan can divert our full attention to is something that he can use to draw us away from God. Anytime he can redirect us from the important parts of Christianity to minor parts of Christianity, to the exclusion of everything else, is something that Satan can use. You see some TV preachers that always focus on one issue. It's the only thing they ever talk about. Sometimes it's send me money. But other times they'll have some kind of a specific issue, and it seems to be the only thing that is of any concern to them. And it's easy for us to fall into the same trap. You know, our ideas about baptism are different than many denominations, and it's easy for us to focus so exclusively on that that we forget the larger concept of Christianity. And we lose Christianity for the details. Or as we talked about before, having the perfect worship service, which is exactly what Scripture intended and that is uniquely different than every other worship service. If we focus exclusively on that and forget to think about the love that's the basis for our Christianity, then Satan is one. We have to strike a balance. It's not that those things individually are wrong, but they're a part of the whole. And we can't get focused or especially obsessed on one particular aspect of Christianity and forget the important part.
Isn't it where we have a problem? Russia said we've got to become involved in things that are against Christian values. If not, then those values become lost. So where do you draw the line? Because if you go in and become involved in a situation where you're fighting abortion, you're fighting homosexual marriages, but how do you, if you don't go in that full force, there's a line there that's really hard, that doesn't become your obsession, mm-hmm. and you're forgetting about your relationships with Christians and with God. Mm-hmm.
C.S. Lewis said, provided that meetings, pamphlets, policies, movements, causes, and crusades matter more to him than prayers, sacraments, and charity, is ours. So there's your line that you can't cross. Those things have to be part of your Christian life. They can't be your Christian life. Because you have to keep in mind there's more to Christianity than political issues or public policies. While those are important, and it's important for us to tackle them, it's not so important that we have to completely lose our focus on Christianity and our own Christian life.
Well, you know, Peggy brought up the abortion issue, and I know that that's it really is. We don't talk about it much in the church, but I came to the conclusion years ago that putting on the full court press politically is probably a little bit of a waste of resources. I think we'd be a lot better off if we can convince one or two women not to have an abortion than we are trying to convince our senators and representatives to pass a constitutional amendment or whatever, you know, outlawing it. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes that's really the subtle difference there is you can get so caught up in the political push, for lack of a better word, that we do forget the spiritual, which is exactly what
And you got the guy to go out and shoot the abortion doctors.
Well, sure.
That's hypocritical. I mean, I know that's an extreme, but, you know, he talks about extreme, so what about the Westboro Baptist Church if you start calling that homosexuality? Is that really what you want to be caught up in?
Why, I said any extreme is useful to Satan.
And how many people see that and say, oh, well, that's what Christianity is about?
And as horrific as the murder of an unborn child is, still making that illegal doesn't save anybody's soul. And our mission is to save souls. And so it's great that we work on that whenever it is possible, but we have to remember our primary motivation is trying to have people's souls saved. Closing comments. Tom, could you lead us in prayer?
Gracious, loving Jesus.